Welcome to our 9th episode of Meet the Brewer. This is a special one. To celebrate Indie Beer Week, we've teamed up with 3D City Brewery here in Limerick City, and we're doing a podcast live from the brewery. James and Gustavo are sitting in front of the tanks, and I'm going to have a good conversation about beer, brewing, and all things Brazil. Steve joins me here in Peggy's parlour, where I can keep him quiet, because as we all know, he's mad to talk. So let's kick this off. Live from Trinity City Brewery, Nicholas Street, Limerick, episode 9, Meet the Brewer. Huge, huge welcome to Peggy's Parlour here at Mother Max. Myself and Steve are sitting here, absolutely delighted to be doing our first outside broadcast. Woo. Who'd have ever thought it? Live from Nicholas Street, we have James and Gustavo, who are going to big up Trinity City all for Indie Beer Week. This week has been momentous in many, many ways. It's been the first pour of Invasion. It's been the first pour of Outcast. And on draft, never before poured. And we feel immensely proud to do that. And to everyone on, I mean, it's definitely unique, right? I want to say this weekend we've sold about 150 litres of Trinity City beer.
Woo-hoo!
I'm about to say, we were open and we were operating, that wouldn't be such a big deal, right?
Soon, Michal, soon.
We're not, but so it is a big deal, right? So 150 litres of beer. It's a lot of growlers, guys, and we want to say thanks to all of you. So I'm going to put it over to Steve.
Hey, guys, how are you? What a fantastic setup. Thanks a million to Mike and James for housing us. It's amazing. I was walking down through the town tonight. As I was saying to Mike before we came on, I had my drinking jacket on me. I had my moving. The only thing I was missing was ringing Tony and going, I'll meet you in Peggy's parlour there. We'll get a bowl of wings and a couple of cheddar pints. Soon enough, we'll have it.
Soon enough.
You guys are going to get a fantastic opportunity tonight. Thanks a million for buying all the growlers and to tasting the beers. Invasion, which was launched, obviously, during the lockdown, and Outcast, a beer that has a number of different iterations. During the lockdown, you're going to have a taste through it, and Gustavo is going to talk you through about it. I was warned today to keep shut up, so we're going to focus more on Gustavo in the brewery, but Mike is here to keep me in tow, right? But again, I see a lot of familiar faces, lads, across the screen there. Absolutely fantastic to see everyone, and I hope you're all keeping well. I'm going to be drinking along here with you, so sláinte for your health.
So I'm going to say, as this is our first outside broadcast, there may be interruptions due to Wi-Fi, etc., right? But we do have a second camera in play. So if one goes kind of wrong, we'll just move it down. So if you
switch, I mean, wave. The second camera.
Second, all right. So, okay, I'm going to say, let's get this kicked off, right? So in true Meet the Brewer style, right, we're not going to talk about the beer just yet, and I'm going to push it over to Gustavo, and I'm going to push it over to James, and I suppose really what we want to hear is Gustavo's story about how he got here, how he is in Limerick, how he is brewing, and all of that good stuff.
Just before we kick off, I would just like to reiterate that Gustavo does have an Italian passport. His documentation is all up to spec, okay, before anyone asks.
So over to the two of you guys. Go for it.
Go for it.
So I was actually just reminded today, it's the Eurovision tonight. So it's nearly like Eurovision. So this is a Trinity City Brewery jury. Our votes will count as follows. But no, on a serious note, it's brilliant to be here. You can see in the back straight away the tanks that actually brewed some of this beer. The master brewer beside us, no matter what Steve says, this is the guy here. So I suppose we're all here to listen to Gustavo tonight. So I suppose kick it off.
Yeah.
Like a little bit about you,
James,
how we got into brewing, and so we can go from there. Okay, so we're going to kick off.
Yeah, so, well, I'm known as Gustavo, the master brewer here in Trinity City. First, a big thanks for Mother Max, Mike, and James for welcoming us to have the beer. We are delighted to have the growlers on tap. And thank you for people who bought the growlers from us. It's really good to see the beer moving and people supporting us here in Limerick. That's very important for us. It's really, every time we sell a beer, it's not just a kind of invasion with a guy running with a can of Invasion down the street, and it really feels good every time we see that. So thank you for that. So I'm the master brewer here in Jersey City since 2018, almost 3 years now. I've been working with beer for 10 years now. I started as a homebrewing back in 2007, I suppose. I was in college doing chemical engineer. Back in the day, I was doing also a technician course in chemistry. And that's when a teacher came by and he told me, like, oh, you can do beer at home. You know, you only need 4 ingredients. And I'm like, really? Can you do beer at home? That's how I started. Like, I bought a homebrew kit, went home with my brother and a small apartment that we share with some friends during college, and start homebrewing. From there, I worked in a homebrew shop back in Brazil, in a small craft brewery that was like 2009, 2010. After that, I got my degree in engineer, went to work for AB InBev, where I had the opportunity to go to Chicago to get my master in brewing. Then I went back, got out of InBev, went to a small craft brewery that we started in Brazil. And then the opportunity came in 2018 with Trinity City. And I was looking forward to travels a little bit from the world, get outside. I'm from a small town in Brazil, so it was really nice. When I went to Chicago, for me, it was quite like a biggest experience, being outside of my country, of my city, seeing these different places. That was 2013. So ever since there, I was like, if I have opportunity to travel, to make other city, other countries, I will take it. And then Trinity City came with the opportunity of a job in brewing. and for me, it was like let's say, that take the opportunity and go, let's travel, adventure.
So I suppose the big question is, will we dive straight in and say, how's Steve? What's he like to work for? Does he leave you do what you want? Does he kind of rein you in a bit? Does he, you know, what beers do you like to brew? Give us a taste.
Yeah, it was like, I've been into craft brewery scenes and in the big breweries. And here in Trinity City was, at the beginning, I suppose, was a little bit different. It's a different country, it's a different language. You always struggle a little bit with that in the beginning. But everything, to be honest, since the first day that we got here, me and Luciana, everything went great. Like the job itself, like with Steven, with Gabriel was here back in the time. The job itself is really good. You have confidence, you have the liberty, you can take you know, your own time, you can take your own skills into it. And the city itself really helps. We were kind of scared with, like, we didn't know Limerick, we knew about internet and things like that, but until we got here, it was like, what are we gonna do? That we know that we need to know everybody here. And since the first day, everything, like, even the weather, we were like, is the weather gonna be that bad? But even that, it's not that bad. I think it's good.
I would suppose if we take engine sessions, it's all engraved in the we do get some bit of sunshine every now and then.
Yeah.
So I suppose, just as you say, you kind of went to kind of craft a small craft with your brother in Brazil.
Yeah,
was that kind of commercial, or was it kind of just home brewing? Or
no, it was always home brew. Like, yeah. me and my brother. So we have my father. He used to work for the agriculture department in Brazil, and he always deal with, like, small producers who make cheese or plant something and sell. And it's my town in Brazil is a very famous for wine industry, so we would visit this wine facilities. And me and my brother, we always like to do things our own way, you know, like put our effort into it, our looking into it, our dedication into it. And that's like, and the beer came into it. So when we first started, it was me and him. We got the homebrew kit, and we didn't have any equipment or anything at all. very basic knowledge. Like
I know Steve always says when he started off in Canada, I think it was the bathtub, I think in the flat road. So, but was that kind of it? Did you start kind of in your kind of home base?
We used to share an apartment with other two guys in college, and we had like a 10 liters size, and that was it. And we just bought those big bottles of water, plastic water, as a fermenter. And the first ones didn't work that well, but then we got more into the thing, and we started liking the idea of building your own recipes. I started during college learning more about the ingredients, the process. And me and my brother, we started homebrewing at home, just for ourselves, just like for something interesting. But then, you know, like the neighbor came and like, do you have beer? Like, yeah, we have. Can I buy some? Well, yeah, you can. Like, can I buy a full case? I'm like, no, I have a couple of bottles here. But then things start moving on. We always have, I still have my first homebrew kit. That I actually set up back home. My brother still uses it. He's asking me for a recipe for a Belgian double. I have to send to him.
Of course,
he's still brewing that there. The last time I went to Brazil visiting my parents, we brewed barley wine, aged in a oak barrel. Got a few bottles out of it, so it's good. It's still
good. When you went to the States, did you actually? I know you say you were studying over there. Were you rolling over there as well, or is it kind of just studying?
No, just drinking.
Just drinking. college student.
It was a little like for me. I'm very fortunate with that because I got into the InBev a job.
Yeah.
I think it was like the beginning of the year, and then in September I went. I got. Applied for SIBO, they accepted for the master brewing course. So I was still working for InBev, but I went there to get my degree. For me, it was a really important thing because it was part of my job, it was part of the thing that I wanted. I still remember like the very first week that I got into classes. We used to have like classes from 8 a.m. until half five in the afternoon. So it was the whole day classes during the week, and then on a Saturday morning, you would take a test from that week, and you have to get your grades. And like for me, it was my first time outside the country, and I was in Chicago, like my city, like a big city with a lot of things to do. And the first week, I was just in my apartment, digging into the books and reading as much as I can, because I was a little bit scared. Like you have the language, you have the master brewing. InBev was quite like. Was a big thing for them, you know, having a brewer going to silos to get the degree. So I remember the first week I was freaked out, study as much as I can. But then the following weeks I was like, okay, I can handle this. I'm gonna go to the shop and get a beer. So I spent the first week maybe I would get out of class and just read the books, and then the second week I would just get out of the class, go to the shop, get some beers, drink a beer first, and then read the books.
And then, as you said, then you would say you left there, went back to Brazil, and then you decided to go traveling.
Yes.
So was Ireland your first stop, or was it kind of? I know it was your last stop, already, but was it your first stop?
Yeah, it was. Back in Brazil, I was back in InBev, working for InBev. The job was good. It's good for work, even for big breweries. You're still working with beers. Mm. That's the good part. But then coming back from Chicago, my girlfriend was there with me for a few weeks, and we always like since there we were thinking about the opportunities that we had, and we knew like my family and her family, our grandparents were from Italy, so our family still had the heritage and the citizenship with Italy, and we know like Europe could be an easy spot for us in terms of traveling and working wherever. But we were not expecting Ireland, like we were not. Of course, the English helps a little bit for us, like it was the second language that we learned. So coming to Ireland wasn't in the plan, but then like you have the European thing, you have the English, And then the job with 3DC, it was like, let's try, let's see how it goes.
So, yeah. Yeah.
And 3 years after.
Three years, still here. But Steve, will you keep him on for another 3 years?
Will I keep him on for another 3 years? I'd say for sure. Like, me and Gustavo work very well together. Look, we're both quite loose on the hair. If you look at the two, you know, McMahon brothers here, you've got very, very strong in the hair. That you guys work very well together. Me and Gustavo are bald. We work very well together too. I'm going to say, give it a couple of points. We'll see. Yeah, you know, it's starting to thin out as baldness. It's just to reflect on what he was saying there. It's absolutely fantastic to be able to, and you're going to taste some of it tonight, right? To be able to do this beer, like, I never have a fear of, you know, when we sit around and we develop beers and we try new beers and we want to develop a recipe. I never have a fear of the base level of the beer. I always know there'll be a guaranteed quality. And that's history that Gustavo was speaking of, you know, the InBev, the big boys with the big processes, the, you know, the Solarum, the running your own company and running your own craft brewery and knowing the kind of limitation on budgets, which he'll tell you is probably everything, right? But knowing those limitations and kind of the amalgamation between both of those, I love working with Gustavo. I really do. I love being able to sit around. My favorite thing to do actually is to sit around the table, and when we're just talking about, you know, we're designing new beers or whatever it is, and it's not even a piece of paper, it's just me and Gustavo talking, like, you know, there's I don't know if I'm allowed to even say it because it got pushed back a couple of times, but there's talks of rumors of an Imperial Pilsner. You've heard it here first. It was brilliant. We were just sitting around kind of just shooting the cards and what would you like to try? And God, we'd like to do a Pilsner lager kind of a beer, but stronger and this kind of stuff. And that's the kind of thing that I really, really love going, you know. And everyone thinks about our job, right? They think we're kind of sitting around doing this kind of stuff all day long, right? But it's a lot of cleaning and it's a lot of kind of, you know, hard slog, like everything, right? But the good things are when you sit with Gustavo and you do a tasting, and we were doing a tasting of actually this beer and a couple of other beers last night, just the quality control stuff. And you see, Gustavo's very good because he knows, like, I like to talk a bit, but he lets Stevie run his mouth for a small bit and he go, oh yeah, yeah, I'm getting, you know, whatever it is, there's diacetyl and that and there's sulfur in this, and you know, he can nod away and then he'll go to the rest of them. No, it's scratch. Ignore what Stevie says. Yeah, 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 sure, Steve. Yeah, yeah, you're great. You know,
So I'm gonna cut Steve off because I promised Steve wasn't gonna talk.
Yeah,
right?
sorry.
I suppose, Gustavo, I'm just maybe just to frame it up, right? So COVID-19 hit, let's say 15 months ago. Obviously, you know, a brewery of your size, you were both duly focused, right, on the draft sales, on the off sales, but also on as a tourist destination, because like where you're sitting right now is a craft beer experience as much as a working brewery, right? What did you have to do? What did you have to change, I suppose, to survive the last 14 months? And I suppose, what was the process that brought you into creating all the madness, everything from you know, let's say, Haunty Bjor to what we're having today, right? So just, like, even if you think of it, like, Invasion has been born, right? Mm. I mean, and there's been a whole significant rebrand. Maybe just take us through the last 15 months and the madness.
I suppose, like, of course, it's, I think for everybody, it's a different time and a hard time for sure, dealing with the whole pandemic. And at first off, I think we should be grateful to still be here and enjoying this and drinking some beer. And that's the pleasure of it. I think the first week that we noticed, we were really focused on draft, like, you know yourself, ourselves here in Liebrich. We always kept the beer local. We deliver the beers, the kegs, fresh by Thursday for the guys who enjoy during the weekend and replace them on Thursday. And then you see that just gone in the after day, the day after, you just in that whole market that you're based on, it's gone. You don't see kegs moving. So of course that first week's were a little bit scared. I remember sitting with, we had a new girl working for marketing, Alana, she's still with us, a really nice girl. But she got hired, I think, the week before the lockdown. And so she was new to the company, and she came to me like, what we do, what's going to happen? And as I looked to her and I said, if the sky turns red, I'm going to keep brewing beer. So like, people are going to drink beer, I'm going to be brewing beer, and you make your job and we should never get out. So it was like, it was scary for sure. But since then, we started with some experimental things in our very homebrew system, or the very small system, which we made these growlers that you're having now, the session and the IPA, the new ones. And we saw markets for that. We saw people enjoying them, buying them, getting back to us in feedbacks. We used to have just like brown bottles with the tag on it, small batches, maybe 60 bottles. And people came back buying, supporting us, asking for more. And then we saw the opportunity of running Inclusive Street, which is the small brewery, like the small kit. And we kind of, like at the beginning, we were struggling to fix a model with that. How do we produce those beers? How do we release those beers? Now it seems easy to talk. Like, we are going to release 4 new beers in the summer. We just released the May box with the Bohemian Lager and the Mango IPA. So it's kind of like what we like to do as a craft brewery, because I think even my experience in the big guys, like the big guys cannot do what we do, like releasing the testing ingredients, releasing the beers that quick and with that touch that we have. So we took that as an advantage, like we can do that. We have a small system and we know the ingredients, we have the knowledge, we have the technology. Let's try to do that. For me as a brewer, perfect scenario. Being able to try new beers, new recipes, people buying there from us, getting back to us with feedbacks or new orders or new purchase. The same with the growlers here today. That's the best answer you could have.
And I suppose a question for me is, have you kind of a, like, you're talking about recipes and new beers and stuff. Is there like a black book that you've in your back pocket and you pull out and go, well, okay, do you want to do now? We're doing this recipe next. Mm-hmm. Or is it like, as kind of Steve was saying, you sit around a table and kind of trash out what you'd like to do, or what way does it work to say, okay, what are we doing? We're going to do a German Pilsner now. Okay, how are we making that? Do you work backwards, or do you say, okay, we can get a certain hop and mm-hmm. go forward that way? What way do you work it, or how?
It used to be a small black book. Just got too small.
The laptop is out, so yeah.
I think it's, if you work as a brewer, it's always the dream. Like, you see some new release of a hop or a new technique that somebody is using, or even yourself think something that you could try. You normally have those opportunities, but it's very hard to put them into the market. So that's why it's so good to have these kind of things with the growlers. Or with Nicholas Street Brands. We don't have actually like a formula or a procedure to create a new recipe. It always come up with something, either could be something that we drink and we like it and say, like, let's try to do something like that. Could be some ingredient, like we always thought, like watermelon for the summer, like watermelon fruit for the summer seems nice. Can we fit that into our beer recipe? And ourselves, like, that's the good part. Like Steven was saying, we would sit down, have a drink, or I don't know, by the end of the day, and we start talking. And by the end of the conversation, like 30 minutes left, we have like 15 ideas for new recipes. And okay, pick one, two, and let's try. Let's go for that.
Okay, yeah, no, definitely. Because even as it, like, I suppose the last 12 months, just maybe watch, maybe I don't know, 15, 16 new beers, or is it more? Even like, I'm trying to think.
Yeah, so
definitely 15, I'd say, sir.
No, last year was 20 something.
20, whoa.
Just last year. And this year we started already. I think we have 12 at the moment already brewed and released. And we have more coming for sure in this year. It's good to see that it's always a challenge. Them in the market. Of course, we always try before, see what's going on with those recipes, but then releasing the market, it's a big thing for us. We always want to catch the reaction and see. But it's part of what makes us craft brewers, I suppose. Like we do want to try those things. We do want to keep interesting for the customer. We do have, like I was mentioning before, like we have Nicholas Street with these tanks, which are very versatile. Like you can brew different things, different batches. It helps a lot for me to do those things, like throwing watermelon, cucumber in the beer, sour stuff. So we have the opportunity. Let's try something.
Good, good, good. Back to you, Mike. Any questions?
No, I suppose, as I was kind of sitting here listening to it, right? I mean, I know we're talking about Gustavo and Meet the Brewer, right? But there's more than that in the team. Like, and I mean, there's been a huge change even in the packaging. Like, so it's gone from exclusively bottles to now to 440 ml cans. Mm. Like the labels, like the labeling has, if anyone on the call or anyone here this evening will see that, like as you walk in now to the off licenses, it stands out. It almost punches you in the face. Like the labels are exceptionally good, right? I mean, what's the process? Because brewing really good beer, I don't want to say is the easy part, right? But is easier, right? And then trying to sell it becomes even harder. And look, as we've said to some of the brewers in this series, right? The closure of bars makes it difficult because you can no longer say, here, have a little sample or have a little try, right? So customers are purchasing with their eyes now when they're going into the off license. So I suppose what effect do you think maybe that the change of packaging and the labeling has had, and maybe why did you move? I'm not going to say all the way because I know the bottles are still available, but why did you move to the cans for, let's say, maybe outside of Limerick?
Great question.
Yeah, I think it came. We were looking already for the cans, but the pandemic maybe accelerated that. And to be honest, like the same thing as I was talking before, like we were always Limerick based, right? Like, and it was grand. Like opening Nicholas Street was a step more into that. Like gonna open a tourist place in Nicholas Street in the middle of the medieval quarter here in Limerick. We were for sure we were happy with that, and with the COVID and everything closing up, we found ourselves a little bit tied up, couldn't move. And then all the, it gave us a push maybe to go outside Limerick. And we knew we needed that new branding. And again, I mentioned Elena, she came with maybe a young spirit, a new thinking, which what we are looking for, still looking at what we are, like we are 3D City, keep the name, keep the city on focus of it. Moving into cans, I suppose, as a craft brewery, and for me as a brewer, it's a smart choice. We see ourselves in the brewery handling them much easier, not only like for environment aspect, much easier to recycle, much easier to transport. It's more safe for us in the brewery, to be honest. Like we work with glass, no problem, but it's always glass. Like you're always afraid to drop, to break, to handle it. It is a little bit awkward. And for the beer, like every aspect of the beer, you want to avoid the sunlight. And again, I mentioned, like I saw the guy with the invasion can walking by the street, and it was nice because he was holding the can. I was like not afraid of the light strip coming into the beer. So the can helps with that. It's easier to transport. It seals better the beer. But for the beer point of view, it's easier. It's good to have the beer moving now outside Limerick as well. We're getting good feedback from the rest of the country. So I'd say it was maybe at the beginning, it felt a little bit like we were pushed into it because of the pandemic. But right now we are embracing that and enjoying.
and I suppose just I suppose in terms of like the expansion that has gone on, you know, because I see, like, you know, you were very kind of Limerick centric to begin with. Now you've gone, you've really gone kind of all over the country, right? And I mean, even I can tell you reports from the capital are that you're selling out off licenses in the capital, right? So I mean, like, how has all this come about? Like, how has a business in 15 months given itself a good shake and, you know, taken itself from being very Limerick centric to now being, I don't want to say a force in craft beer in the country, but yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Let's say that.
A
massive force, a huge force. To expand
into Dublin and beyond. Like, I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah, I think it came in the right moment, I would say. And even it was maybe the first time for 3DCD selling outside. But for us, like we always say that, and even Steven always take care of that, to be sure that, like, let's say the things get done the right way. And maybe my background, I think it helps for that, to be honest. But we went outside, and I remember having this conversation with Steven and with the distribution and people from outside Limerick. They didn't know us, or maybe they knew that, like, oh yeah, there's 3DCD brewery in Limerick. But maybe they didn't pay that much attention to us, or they thought it was just, like, you know, some guys that throw grains in the water and make out beer. But I think they didn't know that we actually have a history behind, you know, like 3DCD has been here for a couple of years. And my part, of course, like, we are small, we do small batches, and I literally see every bottle coming out of the bottling line, or every can coming out of the thing. But we do have the background, the knowledge, the technology. So it is a small operation, but we do really care about it, and we do make sure that we have the procedures on it. So I think the first step that we went outside, and people thought, oh yeah, it's just a small brewery from Limerick. And then when we came with the beer, with the label, with the package, with the whole team behind it, and even doing these type of calls with the videos and showing them, like, we have these procedures on place, we have this quality control. Steven was mentioned yesterday, we were here, I think, until late, just trying the beers, like different. We had four different batches of Invasion, and we were looking, you know, what was the pH of the mash in that batch that we brewed in April. And we try to show that, of course, we cannot show that in a shelf in the supermarket or in the off license. But for the people that know us, like, we could feel that they were looking at us and looking and thinking, like, these guys really know what they are doing. You know, like, they are not, we are not here just to joke about, just, you know, hey, let's make beer. Like, this is our profession. This is what we like to do. But this is what we know how to do. So for us, it was nice to see that, like, we went out maybe as an outcast, maybe as somebody that wouldn't got that attention. But then as the time shows, and we are a few months now working with them, it's nice to see that, you know, we are gaining the trust. They see that the liquid is good, the brand is there, we deliver what we make, what we promise. So it's good to have that feedback or that sense back from them.
And does Steve kiss every can that was come off the line? No, as I say, like, I suppose you're a small operation, but, like, as I say, the technology and the techniques behind you to brew good beer. And I suppose the big thing is it's consistent as well. It's consistent across, like, whether, like, you're picking up a can of Outcast or you're picking up, say, a growler of Outcast today or next week. It's consistent.
Yeah, like, I always say that for me, the brewer, the master brewer behind it, he should be like the protector or the guardian. of the quality of the beer. So it's easy, like I start my day in the brewery tasting the water, which is just boring because you're tasting water. But for me, it's important because I get there and taste the water. Like I see if it's clear, if it has any smell. And that goes from the water until the end of the process. Not only me testing, of course, but you know, you have all the lab tests as well. And we try to keep, you know, like do it better every day and repeat. Like it's important for us. Like we want to keep that. We were mentioned yesterday during the meeting that we have Invasion now in cans, which used to be Shannon recipe. We brought the ABV, we made it a little bit older, and we have Harris on cans. And Harris is an old recipe, not an old recipe, but it was the first recipe. And we always like we kept the same thing since the beginning. And that means like we won't change the supply of the malt, even if the price went up or the hops or things like that. Because it's kind of like we know the customer wants that. We want to respect our customers. So,
like
that's
Harris.
Back across
again to you, Mike.
Put
that across to me. Okay, I thought you were going to continue. Jeez, you were doing so well there. I suppose. Look, we've kind of covered it. We've covered an awful lot, right? I mean, let's look at what kind of the beer that we have here tonight, right? And the beer that we poured over the weekend into Growler. So look, we've absolutely fucking gorgeous Invasion, right? We were drinking that. So I suppose we didn't tell anybody what they got. So we sold it as a compare and contrast IPA and compare and contrast session. But nobody actually knows what's what.
Lovely.
So they got an A and a B in terms of the IPAs, and they got a C and a D in terms of the session. So I mean,
Gustavo's gone right out.
He's moving already. Look, he's gone. What's happening here? Oh,
so
no.
Maybe
let's
in terms of the experimental IPA that we got, maybe tell us a little bit about it. What the relationship with, actually, I put it a different way, compare and contrast it with Invasion.
Okay, so we have for the Growlers, two new beers that we brewed. And that's part of the program that we, since last year, or even before we started, because we always like it the same as Harris and Invader, even Outcast now, as beers like hop forward. And trying to introduce new hops and new flavors and new techniques. We want to keep that in touch. We do the mad things. We did the mango IPA and the glamping, which was the peach for a beer cocktail thing in the last box. But we always like to play with those hops, and we have a lot of opportunities with the new hops coming. We were lucky to got from a supplier in New Zealand. The first harvest from an organic farm that were planting the hops there, and they sent us the first harvest that they have of the hops. So we try to play with those hops and try to find something that could be something a hit for us. And like Outcast kind of came in that zone. Like we released last year, recipe was Rona Go Away. I think it was in November. And it was something in that zone, like we were looking for two different hops to play in a beer. And we had a nice feedback of it, and then became Outcast as a new core range beer. So these new beers that you have in the growlers that you experimented was in the same zone. Like we had access to these different hops. One is a session IPA, all with New Zealand hops, one from the organic farm that they have there. And the other one is an IPA. Brewed it's almost, I think it was 5.9 ABV or 6%, and it is 6%, yeah. So it's a strong IPA with American hops, West Coast IPA. More traditional, but we blend three different hops on that, trying to make something more interesting, something more different. Like you do have a lot of options in terms of just playing with those hops. So that's what we were trying to achieve, that different flavors. You have kind of the base recipe or the base beer, as you have an Invasion or Outcast and Harris, but playing with different hops. So it's really more like hop focus, maybe these 2 new beers, trying different hops, different techniques, different additions, but looking for something that we could enjoy maybe all year.
And then you talk about the New Zealand hop there.
Yeah.
Was that hard to get, kind of with COVID and all this kind of thing, and then or is it just easy to bring it in?
I'd say we are trying to do that since last year.
Yeah. And
at the beginning, we were like, yeah, let's try to get some new hop. And you would come, yeah, I have some hop from last year, just release it. And we were like, it's always good to have that. Last year is still pretty fresh and good. And then and then we were always like, what else? What else we have? What else we have? And then this year, I think because we are so annoying and asking for different things, and the supplier came to us like, you know what? There's new breed in New Zealand that you should want to try. It smells good. You can see all the things behind it. Seems suitable for a nice IPA. Would you try? And so let's give it a chance. Let's try to brew something with that. So we did the session one. It's only using three hops, three different hops, two already in the market, and the extra one. And for the West Coast as well, it was more known hops as Summit, Chinook, Centennial, and Amarillo. Trying to achieve something a little bit different.
No, in fairness, they went down well, and they sold well, as Mike kind of alluded to at the start. Mm-hmm. So we actually haven't tried it yet. It's open. We're only on number 8 at the moment. So we'll crack into number B in a minute.
We've cracked into B on this side. We're fairly well through B on this side.
Myself and Michal haven't sat down in 12 months like this and drank a beer together. This is great, crack. Can we come back next week? The Treaty City, yes, and two.
So as
third brother.
As Gustavo was telling us that the hop profiles and was going through the beautiful aromas and all that kind of good stuff, right? He mentioned an Amarillo hop. Am I correct in that you mentioned Amarillo?
Yeah.
Where did that come out of? Yeah. Steve wants to know. He's doing the maths. He's doing
authorize that budget. What's going on there?
Yeah. So there is a budget that Stephen doesn't know about.
if there is, I'm not aware of this.
Yeah.
Financial officer.
So I suppose I'm going to go back to one of the original questions that James asked, right? How do you get on with Steve, right? And how do you work with him, right? Because even as we were sitting here and I had him muted, right? And he was kind of going, who told him he could buy that, right? So it seems to me, right? And I'm going to paraphrase, outside looking in, that you can do what you want once the beer is good and it sells, but then if it fails, what happens? So that's my next question. What's the biggest mess up that you've had in the brewery, right?
That's a great question.
And solely down to you now, not an equipment failure. I don't want to hear an equipment failure. What's the biggest mess up you have had? Doesn't have to be with Treaty, because I don't want you to hang yourself, but but even just in your career as a brewer, what did you do? Actually, give us one from ABM, Bev, because you must have made some mistakes there.
Oh no, like there's contract and things and email that I cannot say. I would go to jail, probably. Like they would catch me.
And that's the point. We know each other. Tony,
you're amongst friends. You don't want to tell anyone.
Yeah, there is. Well, before coming into Treaty, I was working for Solarium, a craft brewery in Brazil. And it was pretty much the size of Treaty City and kind of the same vibe, the same idea. And there was one day, it was like Friday, I don't know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I was by myself in the brewery brewing. And what we used to do that was three batches in a day. So I would start in the early morning, brew one batch, then the second. And then by the end of the day, I would be finished the third batch. And I was by myself. It was Friday, maybe 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know, but it was like Friday, you know, close the doors and go home. But I was still with one batch to go to the fermenter. I was in the kettle, in the whirlpool, actually, but just waiting for, like, the final step to move the wort into the fermenters and finish the day, put the yeast, let it work, and go home. And the brewery was kind of outside in the city, so you wouldn't have access to that. People wouldn't, you know, walk by it. It was an enterprise center. And I was brewing, and a guy started knocking at the door. And I was like, I'm not going to answer that. But he insisted and knocking at the door. And I was like, okay, I'm going to see who it is. And I opened the door, and this guy came. A nice fellow. Quite annoying at that point, because we were brewing in Solero. We didn't have a light lager. We didn't have, you know, those common beers. We had a Hell's lager, an IPA, a Weizen, and a Belgian ale. So those were the beers that we brewed. And this guy came, and he were like telling me that you should brew a light lager. You need to have a light lager. And I was like, yeah, like, we have the plans. We will do it. I was like, getting back to my system, and I said to him, like, can you just give me 2 minutes? I'll be back with you. And I went back to the kit. I just needed to open one valve so that the wort would go to the fermenter, and then I could go back to him. So I went back to the kit, opened the valve, went back to him, chat with him about the light lager, blah, 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 spent maybe 10 minutes with him. He was gone by the door. I went back to the brew system to check if the beer went to the fermenter, and I see in the vessel of the beer just like the final 2 liters of the wort just like going down the drain. I actually opened the wrong valve. Instead of sending it to the fermenter, I opened the drain valve, and all the batch went to the drain. And I was just like, what's happening here? And I wanted to grab the guy back and tell him, like, it's our fault. So I lost a full batch of beer because of that. Not really proud. It took us a little bit. The budget went down that month. But we survived. So the end of the day was not that big mess, but I still hate it.
Sorry, Gustavo. I just like to clarify, that was Salerum, yeah? That was that wasn't Nicholas Street? It sounds
no,
like
years
ago. It was Shuri where we last time. Oh, yeah. Is there? How do you get into the waiting room so we can have a private chat? Where does that work?
I suppose, Steve, just to put the question to you then, what was your biggest mistake?
Oh, you're not going to get that one.
Gustavo's whispering my ear here now, so.
He's whispering, buying a brewery.
Yeah. I'll say my biggest mistake was going for a weekend with James to... the Barback Games in Berlin. Yeah, that was it. And I said to my wife, it's going to be a nice, handy weekend. It's going to be really, you know, we're all calm. There's going to be no, listen, I tell you what, right?
There was no brewing done there.
There was no brewing, yeah. And all I can tell you guys, I have a picture of James on the back of a plastic horse, right? Outside a church at 4:30 a.m., right? And we were looking worse for weather. I won't go into the details of the story, right?
So Just for clarity for everybody here, because they obviously haven't the clue what's going on, right? So there was a competition run 2 years ago by the brand Fernet Branco. So it's a spirit, right? It's made famous in Prohibition times in the US, because it was sold as a treat all cough syrup tonic through the pharmacies. So it's a big Italian brand. It's worldwide, right? But it is what it is, right? Some people love it, some people hate it. It's like Marmite. But they ran a competition here in Ireland to win a weekend away in Berlin at the World Barback Games, and the winner would represent Ireland. So the two boys won. We won it. Steve brewed a beer using Fernet Branco. We created some cocktails using Fernet Branco, and basically they got sent off to Berlin for a weekend to represent Ireland. And by God, if the pitchers were ready to go, boy, they didn't do us any harm. Yeah,
there was a rave, right? There was a rave inside in the church, right? There was a rave, right? And myself and James, and you know, like, everyone was like, oh, calm. And it was, we were inside in Europe and everyone is cool. It's Berlin. They were all wearing skinny jeans. Everyone looked like they were fucking cosmopolitan photo shoot gig, right? And myself and James, he rock in, right? As if we were after being left out of the wild. And the two sides of the church were all, like, there was like six bartenders there, all free, but everything was shots, right? But it was all this kind of mad stuff, like, you know, there was all kind of mixers and obviously Fernet and stuff, you know? And I remember James about six deep at the bar roaring at you, man, I don't want any of the foopy stuff. I don't want, just give me the
noise, noise. Nice.
Noise, everything was three quarters ice. But anyway, so it culminated in, there was, because it was a rave, it was obviously mad, kind of an arc scene and stuff, right? And there was like an 8-foot plastic horse outside the front of the church, right? And James decided when he came out, said, we got to get up on this horse, we got to take a picture. So anyway, sorry, this is probably not for,
I'm going to end this conversation by saying that as it was Sunday morning at 4 a.m., I got a text from the Ireland representative saying that the two boys had kidnapped the heir apparent to Fernet Branca, and he wasn't seen. They'd slipped his security.
Oh,
and
Lord.
The three of them were loose in Berlin, and he couldn't be found, right? And
he's worth like 900 million or something, or 950 million.
So the two boys were off, right? And the story goes, now whether the boys want to admit it or not, the story goes, Steve was trying to sell him a brewery, and James was trying to sell him a bar, and they were willing to do a cash deal there and then for it. But look, we're going to leave that one.
I probably shouldn't have told that story. Have we an edit button?
We're okay. This is why we don't go live, right?
I suppose we've
a lovely view at the moment, right, of the tanks, right? There's gorgeous tanks, right, that are there. And it's, for anyone that has visited, it's a beautiful setup. For anyone that hasn't, just take our words, it really is, right? Where did they come out of? How did they arrive in this country, or who met them? You know,
who's picking these questions?
I don't know.
How did he get in this run?
So when I joined Real City, it was August, and again, everything was new for me, right? Like new country, new job, new language, everything else. And like 3 weeks after or 4 weeks after, Steven was, I knew about the plan, like we're going to open a brewery in the city center, a small brewery, a tour facility. We're going to have a kit, a small brewery kit there, where we're going to brew different recipes. And I was like, that sounds amazing, right? Like that sounds a dream. Nice, let's go for it. And then when I got here, like the job, I started the job, signed the contract, whatever. And 3 weeks after, like, I got your ticket for Norway. Say, okay, Norway, well, I want to travel, I want to know other places. Yeah, we're going to Faya. I've never heard about it. And then I Google it, I'm like, Faya, it's a small island in the middle of nowhere. Like, we're going there to get the kit to Nicholas Street, these tanks here. And I was like, okay. So I came to Ireland to get murdered in Norway. We got in the plane, Steven, Tony, his father, Gabriel, and me. And we were like, we're going to take out a kit that is installed in a brewery. We're going to disassemble it, put in a container, ship to Ireland, and get back to Ireland in 4 days. And I was like, I didn't want to say because it was my third week, but I was like, yeah, that sounds terrible. Like, not going to happen. But we got the tickets. We flew to Norway. We got there in Bergen, nice city. And then the girl who was selling the equipment came with the car, drove us half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours. I was like, for sure, we're getting murdered this place. And then she was like, okay, we arrived, middle of nowhere. And then a ferry came to collect us. I was like, okay, now we go to an island to collect the kids. Sounds interesting. We got a ferry, went to the island, like 200 people live in that island. I'm still pretty scared. Obviously, I was like, no way we're going to have a brewery coming out of here. But then we got to this place where this kit was installed, and Stephen gave us like a few tubes and said, yeah, that's the brewery that we're going to take back to Limerick, break it down, label everything, put in pallets, and we're going to move back to Limerick. So we started, I think it was like a Thursday or a Friday. And our idea, like for me, and even Gabriel was back there in the time, it was Norway for us. Like, it's a different country, something to see. We have 4 days there. If we could break down the brewery, put in the container in 2 days, we could enjoy the city for 2 days. So we did that in 2 days. We spent, I don't know, with rain, with cold, with whatever it was there. We broke down this equipment that you see here. We put it on a container and shipped it back to Limerick. We were able to enjoy the other 2 days while Stephen was trying to pay for the equipment. I don't know about that, but I know it was something. And then we came back to Limerick. And of course, the problem was to assemble back the kit and put it in one piece. But we did it. It was weird, nervous enough for the third week of the work of going to Norway, break down equipment, getting back into Limerick, assembly back again. But happy enough to say that we did it, we accomplished that, and it's working. That's the main thing.
And I suppose then we'd say, you know, we've kind of touched on it already. Like as it's not just a functioning brewery; it's a visitor's attraction as well. So maybe tell us how's that going to work? So when COVID is done and dusted, and we start to live with it and move beyond this, you know, where do you see the Nicholas Street establishment or Nicholas Street Brewery going, or what part will it play in the city maybe?
Yeah, they say that always like a great city should have a great brewery. And I think that's what came to us as well. Like we are trying to represent not only ourselves as brand, but always as well as the city. You have a good chance here, a good opportunity. The city it's big itself. It has the opportunity, and we were kind of we have Tudor's Road. Our main facility where we produce the core range, the big batches, which is nice, it's good, but it's very industrial. And when we started Nicholas Street, it was kind of like our way, like it's in the middle of the city, it's easy to walk by, it's very welcoming in a sense, like you have the front house there, but you can just, well, before COVID, of course, you could just come in, have a chat, listen to some music, and right beside you, you have the brewery where we are now with the full kit, with the brewer here, with the ingredients here. Like you can learn about it, you can feel it, how the atmosphere is. We had a short run, I suppose, or maybe we had a big plan opening this place to show to welcome people here, to bring them here, to see that the beer that is produced here is produced by people like us. And you would have a chance, you know, to get your beer fresh, to know the equipment, to know the people who make that beer. And you know, it's a local team, you know, you're supporting a small business from your city. We always think that that's nice. We had a short run with the tours. We are trying to start the business. The brewery, the tours, the off licensing, trying to sell the beer here. Of course, after with COVID, everything stopped with that. But now, hopefully, with some maybe better numbers or better news with the virus control, we can open open back here again. And that's what we want, you know, to be close to the customer. For them to feel comfortable to come to us, to be proud of what we can offer to them, and to know better what they are having. You know, I always thought that was the first thing that got me. Like I was mentioning before with my father when he used to work with agriculture, visiting those guys that used to produce their own wine or their own cheese or things like that. I always felt, you know, like it's a proud for them to be producing them and to know them and to see what they are able to do. I think that's what we want to show here, like what we are able to do, what we can offer. I'm looking forward to be open again, to welcome people here, not only for the beer, of course, but for the entertainment, for the chat, for the change of having a nice chat.
Okay, we've kind of come to the point in the evening now where I kind of feel we should maybe open it up to questions. Now I'm going to say, can we just keep it to questions for Gustavo, because Steve's had two drinks now and he's kind of flahoolock here at this stage.
Woo, Mike! I'll be shifting Mike in the background if anyone is watching. Me and Mike will be kissing. Have me now. Tell my wife not to remarry. Know what I said?
We're trying to keep him quiet, right? We're trying to keep him quiet. Okay, so if anyone, like, you know the format, guys. Anyone that wants to talk, either raise your hand electronically or unmute yourself and go first. Anyone there? Oh my God! It's the first time ever. I think we've had a quiet room.
Wow.
Hugh is there? Go, Hugh.
How are you, lads? It's just a question. I really like the Ferner Branca Red Ale combination, actually. And I was just wondering, after your adventures with the Ferner Branca, are you tempted to go for any of the other more obscure and challenging kind of top shelf kind of spirits? You know, like maybe a chocolate stout with green chartreuse or something like that. Or a bit of Bucky.
That's to you, Gustavo.
Is there any spirits that you'd like you to? Would you use any spirits kind of?
So the question, Gustavo, was like you produced the beautiful Ferner Branca beer. Would you look at the top shelf, or would you look at high end spirits to create another beer? You might already be doing it, maybe. Would you look at what was pronounced that again for me, Hugh? What was it you mentioned?
You just like hearing me make a French accent, Mike.
I do, yeah.
It was the a chocolate stout with green chartreuse. Or chartreuse, if you want.
Okay.
There you go, Mike.
And you.
That's a good idea. we do have some ideas to blend in not only the spirits but also the casks, whiskey, bourbon casks. We've been doing it with Siege by the end of the year. It's always good. It's always a good blend, I suppose. You do have some recipes. I think the Ferner Branca went really well with Paris. I wasn't expecting to be that well, to be honest. But you have the opportunities. We are not exactly at this moment, but hopefully for this year, we're still going to have some release, maybe with whiskeys and bourbon barrels or something in that region. Should be something new.
Okay, John Noel, you're next. John, if you want to unmute yourself.
I'm unmuted.
Excellent. Hey, John.
So, I have a friend who lives in San Diego County in California. It's kind of the epicenter of this West Coast IPA nonsense. He claims that IPA needs high alcohol to offset the hops. And I just wondered what you think about that idea.
Alcohol, more than that. So it needs a high alcohol to offset the hops. No, I wouldn't think it that way. The IPAs, the origin of it was to be a strong beer. You know, like you would have a strong beer blended in with a strong hop recipe. You know, like you have, like hops are strong enough if you get the hops, like the palate of hops, and you make a tea or it, like don't try to chew, I suppose, but they are pretty strong. So they do actually need that strong base with the ABV and with the malt flavor as well. I think that was the first idea with the IPAs when they came up. And actually after that, the release of the new hops and the breeding of them into more like flavorish, more pleasant flavors, not that, you know, like that resinous and bitter flavors helped to create the session beers or the beers with light ABV. I think you do have like a historic moment of that where the hops that you have available to brew the beer would match a strong beer with a strong ABV, maybe like that's the 90s, beginning of the 2000s. And then lately in 10, 15 years from now, you have the development of these new hops with more fruit character, maybe even sweeter flavors would suit better for a low ABV beer or for a more session beer. So they would combine better. So I would suppose it's more about the recipe itself, like how do you blend the recipes, sort of the hops that you have available or what you want to brew. And the growlers itself maybe show that we did a session IPA with New Zealand hops, which were, I think, we used three hops in that New Zealand, and the latest of them maybe came out in the market at 2014, maybe. So they, like, if you think about the market, that's recent enough, where you have a strong IPA that there is in the growlers, the 6% beer, which their hops that were released before 2000 or 1990 something, which are more bold and strong hops, which is more suitable for strong beers. I suppose it's more like a recipe choice between the hop profiles that you have available. and just say an IPA with the hops. Yeah.
Across. Okay, so with a question, I'll go to you next, Owen, okay, but just a question there from James on the chat, right, and I suppose I'm going to put this one to Steve, maybe. Oh. So would you think of moving to a more central location for a brewery pub location in Limerick, as Nicholas Street is a little bit off the beaten track?
Oh.
Now, before the question is answered, I'm going to say that Mr. Owen Nocton, who's going to ask the next question, mentioned that the Wickham Tap is up for rent.
Wow.
Any room, any speculation or any insight into the rumours that have been going around?
I can neither confirm nor deny. I've been taking advice not to mention and to bring up the Wickham Tap. I will never say never, right? Nicholas Street obviously is the centre of the old town in Limerick, and it is the tourist hub in Limerick, right? But that has shifted over the last 12 to 18 months, right? And you're seeing people coming back down into the Market Quarter. So we always have an eye as to, you know, what's current and where the way the trend and what things are moving on. I won't say we're actively pursuing it, but I will say everything is on the cards. Is that vague enough? And is that
I'm going to push you even further, right? Because like, I want to say there was like John McCarthy is coming out about any room, any to the rumor that you're opening on Wickham Street. There was a rumor around this town this week that you were seen above on a site viewing it. Now is the time to put pin it to the chest and say, are you moving?
I'm gonna plead the fifth on this one. I will say we did look at sites.
Right. Well, hang on, stop. You're amongst friends, right? In the same way as we told Gustavo he could talk about AB and Bev, go for it. Yes. Tell us the truth.
We're looking at sites. We're looking around. When the pandemic hit, we reassessed everything. Gustavo touched on it earlier when we looked at, you know, the type of beers, the branding, what we do. And it would be remiss of me as the director or the steerer of the company to not watch where the iron is hottest, let's say, right, in Limerick City. And I see, you know, I see that Thomas Street, you know, into High Street, into the Market Quarter run is really at the moment is on fire. And I've seen some, let's say, further developments that are on the cards for this area, and it's about to take off, right? It's about to get escalated even more than it was before. So yeah, we're looking around the town, and we are looking to see, you know, what can we do to augment or to shift our offering to make it more appealing, for sure. Yeah, I'd say that's
okay.
Steve is still very vague, was it?
Steve is giving me the safety word here, so we're moving on.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Unlocked your hand raised. I'm moving on to you.
Hey guys.
Hi.
So this is for Gustavo, I guess. And it's coming down to, I did a little bit of research there while he was giving a rundown of his background and stuff about the Duas Cabezas, and they have a special like day every year called Dia de Cerveza Impura. So would Treaty City think of probably doing something like that and making any kind of beer they want to make under that one condition of no yeast, no hops, or no water in the beer?
Jesus. Yeah, like I was used in Brazil, like there's a strong craft beer scene there even before when I was there, with different ingredients and different methods. I would say, I don't know if Stevens wants to cut me there, but
I'm saying to Mike, I'm going, Mike, unmute me, Mike, let me in. I want to talk.
So just before, can I just clarify, right?
Yeah. Give us that again.
It's no hops, no yeast. Did you say no water?
Yeah, no yeast, no water, no hops.
What are they using? Sorry, because I must have missed.
I think honey. I think is one of the things they use instead of water. Well,
so, you've caught me, and it's a rare enough. I'd even admit it, to be honest, Joe. I've never heard of that. So you don't use a yeast. I've seen that. That's kind of like a groot, right? Where you have a wild fermented groot where there's no hops and there's no yeast, but no water. So what? They'd use pure honey from it. Is it
fruit as well? I think, yeah.
It's like fruit.
Love that idea.
We still try to make beer, you know. Like, I'm not against those trials. And to be honest, I did drink some of those weird things with no hops and brew it with just only fruits instead of the water. They are nice, of course, like they're pleasant drinks. But like it's a step out of the beer scene itself, you know, like it doesn't taste. It kind of like too far away from the beer. I wouldn't say we wouldn't try. Like you're seeing here, we do have the small kit. It allows us to do that. But for the summer, anyway.
Can I just say it's kind of funny, right? Because it sounds like we're getting into the world of mixed fermentation here a bit.
Ooh.
Like the wild Limerick yeast. So just, I'm going to know, Steve, be quiet.
No,
right?
I am. I'm relaxing.
So in the last couple of Meet the Brewers, right, we've been talking about terroir, and we've been talking about the role of yeast and we'll say local yeast. Have you harvested a Limerick yeast, and have you used it to create the taste of Limerick? Oh. Yes.
Sorry, Gustavo, go on. You could...
It is something that we want to achieve, to be honest. We want to have that Limerick yeast or the terroir or whatever you want to call it. We did some experimentation trying to isolate some yeast from Limerick itself. We took some sample. So the building that we are here, it's quite an old building, maybe 200-300 years, if I'm not lying here. But anyway, the place still had some oak beans on it to support the brewing. And one of the samples that we do was that oak is a very good wood to accommodate some fungus and some living things on it. And the beams that were supporting this building before we came in, we took out those beams, those wood beams, and we tried to sample them for some type of yeast or something that we could brew with it. The result wasn't that good. We were able to find some things, but it's still like that's until first of all, I would say like there's the safety issue. We don't want something bad or something harmful to grow in our beer. So before we get into actually build up some product with it, we went to the Shannon River as well to try to get some flowers that were growing there to see if we could get some, again, some even some bacteria or some yeast that could turn some flavor into our beers. That was maybe more than a year ago now. The results were quite good, but we found something, but it's very hard. At this moment, it's very hard to answer if that would be a Limerick yeast or a Limerick unique thing to brew with. But yeah, we chanced it. The first answer was not bad, not that good. We will try again, but that's a major step to take in.
Do you want to tell Gustavo about the the only viable experiment that came out of the milk market, wasn't it? I believe. You guys, did you sample oranges from the milk market, or was it turnips from the milk market? I don't know if we're even allowed to speak about this, to be honest with you. This was a collaboration with LIT. I don't even know.
I was trying to hold.
I think there's some kind of NDA, right? You're not allowed to say what you did.
Was that stuff Tony grew in his back garden, or was
that right? So sorry, John. We got the oak bean from here. We took some flowers from the Shannon River. We took, I don't know what it was, but something from Tony's garden. We went for the milk market. The girl had some mushrooms that we tried, and the other had. Was not sage, was not lettuce.
It's a turnip.
Was one of the, yeah, cabbage. Yeah, exactly.
How much of a beer would that be, right? Where we got our
a cabbage beer. You heard it here first.
I love it.
We are trying.
John, good buddy of ours, John, and a good big fan of 3DC and a big supporter of 3DC. He was asking,
hi, John,
is there any chance of an Otterbank collaboration?
Ooh, love it.
I think that would be fantastic. You know?
I can tell you now, John, right? Me and Decky in a room is like me and James in a room, right? When you introduce alcohol, things get a bit out. It's one of those ones, you know. T says to me, "You're not allowed to go out with James. Like, you get not tonight. No, you're not going out with James. Oh, I won't see you for a week." You know.
Right. I'm moving on from that. Right. So I suppose, Gustavo, you'd mentioned the milk market, and you'd mentioned Tony, and you'd mentioned a few other bits and pieces. There's actually a lovely story. I mean, we were here back when we could open, right? We were here one evening, and you were having a beer, and we were talking about sours. Actually, Gabriel was around at the time, and we were talking about sours, and you said to me, "What kind of a sour would you make that would be Limerick, Mike?" And I think I said to you, "I'd go with a rhubarb sour." And I never forget your face, right? Your face just dropped, and you kind of looked at me and you said, "Okay." And I didn't actually know what was wrong with what I had said. And then Steve the following day, and I said to Steve, "Did I say something wrong because I mentioned rhubarb sours?" And maybe I'm going to leave you tell the rest of the story, because Steve's mother made you a rhubarb tart. And gave you a lovely rhubarb tart, and you had decided you were going to make a rhubarb sour, and you thought it was do you want to tell that story?
Gabriel was still here, and we were looking to do the first sour or trying to introduce a sour, and again we wanted something local, something that we could use, you know, like fresh or go to the market, you know, like it's rhubarb season or something that it's in the season and that's used for a beer. And I got, when I jumped into Gabriel, because he always mentioned, like, we don't have rubber in Brazil. We have no idea what was it before coming here. And Gabriel would advise me in the brewery. He was like, if Stevens comes to you saying about a rhubarb thing, don't get it. He's going to say it's sweet. He's going to say it's best, but it's not. Something weird. Like, don't try it. And I was like, well, I'm here to try new things. Like, let's give it a chance. And then I ate it. I was like, that's really interesting. Like, it's a different flavor. We never had it before. And then we were looking for a sour beer, for a sour spectrum. Like in Brazil, we would have, I don't know, some fruits to pair with the sour, would go with it, or pineapple, mango, whatever, those sweet fruits. But I never had a rhubarb. And then when Steven gave to me the rhubarb tart, I thought it was interesting, but never got to me in a beer. And then talking to you, Mike, and you were like, a rhubarb sour. And I was like, this is $1 million. Let me get back to the brewery.
Don't tell him he'll want some payback from it. If you...
Oh, I want commission.
But the hardest part was not coming up with the idea or the recipe or to brew the beer. The hardest part was to get to Tony to give out the rhubarb for us to brew the beer, because we need a lot of rhubarb, so we're taking all his rhubarb to brew the beer.
And then
I think he was not that happy with that.
And then Gustavo, you created Edge as part of the Liberty. You came up with Edge, which was a rhubarb sour.
Yeah, so that was Edge. So following the Limerick idea of Edge and Embrace, we came up with two recipes. The Embrace was a hazelnut beer, more warm, more balanced. And the Edge was really extreme, a sour beer. It was low ABV, if I'm not wrong, 3%. And with rhubarb, which turned out to be quite pleasant. I remember friends of mine drinking in Modern Max the beer, and they wouldn't go for sours because they wouldn't like sours, but they would drink it to try it, and they were like, you know what, I really like that beer. But it turned out to be really good. Like, I'm looking forward to repeat that beer.
I'm going to say, and I can give you the exclusive scoop here. Obviously, me and James are mates, and me and Mike as well, right? But me and James are mates here, right? There was a bit of an exchange went down in February this year. Tony, my old fly, I don't know if you've seen him. He's the mad lunatic around with the big hair and the beard, and built the brewery, what's behind, or built the piping above those tanks. You can see it behind the lads there. Actually took some rhubarb from James's garden and this year and put a box outside. So hopefully, and I haven't said this to Gustavo yet, I shouldn't probably say anything, right? But next year we will have enough rhubarb that Tony can make tarts, and or my mother can make tarts, and we can brew beer. There was a lot of controversy in the Canine household. Gustavo was the first male to get a tart from my mother outside of myself. You know, it's a bond between a mother and a son, when, you know, it's a thing, you know. It's got to be very awkward.
So in the chat, there's a couple of really nice kind of things coming in terms of bacon and cabbage. James is gone on that one. Hang on now 1 minute. Bacon and cabbage.
Go back again, Eric.
Hang on. We've got you on the other one. You're back to the computer, sorry. Oh.
It's real Eurovision.
I'd say your phone fell down or something. Did it? But so there's a couple of bacon, cabbage, crab apple, a lack of ore sour. Someone said that the sample is very, very enjoyable. What else have we got?
Lack of try pale ale. What's I love it. You know,
there's a question. Good spread of Kira Allen. Good spread of business around the city. Nick the Street is still very real Limerick. Okay. I think, yeah, look, Kira, I'm going to say, I've seen some of your comments. I agree 100% with it. I do agree with you in terms of Limerick is very walkable. And to be fair, I think to Steve's point, it was kind of like as trends move, you've got to keep an eye on it. Yeah. I don't think there's a move on, but
never say never, Mike. Never say never. We could be neighbors.
Christ. We could be neighbors. Ballyhower mushroom collab. Okay, great.
Love it.
Look, isn't it wonderful, right? Because the collaborations that go on sometimes go a little bit unnoticed in this city, right?
Yeah.
And we're not, compared with other cities and towns, we're not as good to shout out about us, right? And we're not as great to say we've done it. And like I look and I can see two fabulous friends of ours, you know, on here tonight drinking Steve's beer, right? And we've got even Simon there, slantia, right? Lads. And Limerick,
slantia.
Like Limerick Fringe is basically their baby, and they've done fantastic stuff with it. And you know, wasn't it wonderful that Steve was able to create a fringe beer, a Harris fringe beer, right? Which was just immense, right?
Lovely stuff.
And these are the kind of things that go on in the background, right? I mean, I suppose, as we sit here, right? Steve said, right, we're all good buddies, right? Steve and James are the best of buddies. I'm friends with him every now and then. It depends on how...
depends on if we're doing deals.
depends on how the invoice comes in, right?
I love it.
Gustavo's always welcome in this house because I have great time for himself and his wife, to be very honest, which are they're lovely, lovely people, you know, and Gustavo is a very quiet guy in terms of the skill that he has, right? Because I think...
Yeah, I'll second that.
Tonight, right, he has understated everything that he has done, right? And I mean, no disrespect to the man that's sitting beside me, i.e. Steve, but I think that probably the best decision he ever did, and they always say a good manager hires good people, was taking on Gustavo, right? And like, I mean, the beer has come on leaps and bounds. Invasion for me, Shannon was always really good.
Yeah, yeah.
But Invasion is definitely a step above it. You know, I mean, I think even the Harris has gotten a little bit better, right?
Yeah, you can even see it from like with Gustavo. So, and I'm not trying to big up Gustavo here, right? This isn't, you know, but. Gustavo's going, go on. My review.
He's just whispering in my ear here. He said, if you're looking for a pay rise, come on.
I see. Gustavo comes to me and, you know, we've built the kit on Childers Road, right? And obviously we installed the kit there on Nicholas Street. But Gustavo comes every so often and he, like you say, very understated and go, you know what, we've after introducing a new hop profile and there's a new hop regime, this is how we're doing it. Small little changes in the beer that really increase the quality. Like Gustavo's really quality driven. And, you know, it's brilliant for me to be able to rely on that. And I'd agree completely with you. Over the last maybe 18 months, Gustavo has instigated a quality program that has elevated what we do. But also the collaboration, Mike, if you think, right, and just to put it in global context, right? So you have a Brazilian brewer with Italian heritage brewing beer in Limerick, and like you mentioned, the Edge and Embrace with rhubarb, which is a very kind of an Irish ingredient, yeah, or a Western European ingredient. And I believe you were the first to pour Edge and Embrace, or the Edge, right? And I know the story behind it, right? But you were the first to pour that, right? So how collaborative is that when you have, like, you know, four different geographical locations coming together in one beverage, you know, in one kind of aspect of it. But
well, if the truth be told, right, I look, we obviously have a very good relationship with Steve, right? We've a good relationship with the brewery.
Yeah.
We I won't say we grew up together, but we didn't grow up too far apart from each other, right? And I have to say, probably the easiest thing about the guys is being able to work with them, right? And to be able to pick up the phone to go, I need to do something like tonight, right? We had said to Steve a while back, you know, we want to get you on Meet the Brewer. Yeah. We want to talk to Gustavo. I don't want to talk to you, right? Because
everyone's sick of hearing about me, right?
Yeah, you do too.
Everyone has heard about Steve's people, and so it's time to
come back on now, gents.
Okay, right. So I'm gonna move off this a little bit, right? Because five beers poured this weekend. Harris been the big one. The other four were labeled A to D, right? Now, and I just want to kind of put a bit of context in it, right? B and D were the experimental. There's some comments coming through about B being a little bit flat. I would say yes, I agree 100%. We just, when we were muted, we were tasting here, saying the exact same thing. who have we got talking? We were saying the exact same thing, and it's Galaxy, kind of. We're saying the exact same thing, and it's I suppose it's the virtue of the experimental setup that's there, that it's not exactly, it's not 100% finished and refined. It is still very much experimental, right? But do you want to just, Gustavo, just in terms of, I know we kind of explained what B&D were already, right? And we kind of went through them, right? But when we opened D, we got some really kind of, I don't want to say funky aromas from it, right? But it was definitely a bit different, right? And taste wise, it's quite nice, you know. But what was your? He's going for it. Good man. What was your? Jesus, he's fresh glasses and all. Hang on, Jesus. But what was your thinking on D, right? And given that it is kind of falls under the session kind of IPA or session pale ale or however you want to put it, what were you thinking? What were you hoping for?
So the B is the higher ABV IPA, which we brewed with the American hops and the Amarillo Chinook,
yeah,
and Summit, and D was the New Zealand hop, where we got this new variety that we were trying to aim to play with the hops, to be honest. So D would be more like a new thing, a new hop, more sweet, more light, more different from what we had. And B would be the strong IPA normally brewed in the traditional way. They are both the first version of the recipes, and we never brewed these recipes before. They were the first ones to come out from the small system that we have there. The expectation was the lighter one, to be more drinkable, more light in the body, B to be more strong, to be more bold, to be more citrusy, D to be more fruity, to be more easy drinkable. And again, playing with different hops, different ingredients, try to achieve something different.
Yeah, can I ask then, because we had John Allen from Wicklow Wolf Brewery on with us, I think it was either the second episode or the third episode, and he spoke about Southern Hemisphere hops versus Northern Hemisphere hops and kind of in-season hops. Is one of the reasons why you're looking at New Zealand hops because you want to get the freshest Southern Hemisphere hops? Or is there another reason why you selected this?
No. Well, of course, like we always want to reach the freshness. Like the hops is always about getting them fresh, getting them new. For us, looking into New Zealand hops was more like maybe a new label for us, like a new. You know, we have Harris, we have Invasion with traditional hops from the North Hemisphere. And then we have this huge opportunity with these new hops from New Zealand to develop something new. And this is what we were looking with this beer to just, you know, since we have access to that, as fresh as they get, or like I was saying, like, hops that were released in 2020, 2019. Could we get something that we didn't get before? You know, like we're not going to change, of course, the hops that we use on Harris or from the Invasion Outcast. Like, we're happy with those recipes for sure. But we want to see what's being released out there. What else can we achieve? What else can we get our hands on? So D would be that recipe. It would be something like, what else can we brew? What was coming from New Zealand? And B would be more something like, we know what we have and what can we play with them? What else can we brew?
Okay. I, So again, I'm just conscious of everyone's time, right? Because we've kind of moved on a little bit, and it's great crack having the lads here. But is there any other questions anyone want to ask Anton now before we kind of wind it up? We'll give it a moment. We've got quietness.
I'm on a promise now, lads, so we'll have to
cut that out now. anyone, any questions? Just because I kind of want to let the lads enjoy their evening off as well. Okay, if there's no further questions, right, I want to say, you know, a huge thank you to both Steve and Gustavo, in particularly to Gustavo.
Yeah,
I want to say thanks to James as well, because he's done a great job tonight over in the brewery as well. It hasn't been the easiest doing an outside broadcast.
Well done, lads. Well done.
Given Owen has raised his hand. We'll go back to Owen in 2 seconds, right? Given the fact that the broadband over seems to be pretty poor, Steve obviously isn't paying the bill. I don't know what's going on. It seems to be up and down, right?
Yeah, Vodafone. Yeah.
But look, a huge thank you to the guys, right? Okay, let's just Owen has a question, so we're gonna go Owen very quickly. Owen, unmute yourself there.
Yeah. Yeah, very quickly. You know, the White Hag have this mad fucking festival up in wherever, Sligo. Is there any plans for Treaty City to have a similar type festival in Limerick? Because, you know, we all love our craft beers in Limerick. So,
I'm actually gonna jump in there. I'm gonna hand over to Mike, because there's a controversial one here, and Mike can take this question.
Controversial one. Look. I think that the simplest answer to that is yes, there is a time for a place for it, right? As we sit here right now, this is something that we have discussed. Myself, James, even Gustavo has been on this conversation. We have discussed doing this. The time is not right just yet. Mm-hmm. There will come a time to do it. I would say, Owen, we just need to get in a better place with our beer. And I think that the steps that the lads have taken in the last 14 months really, really help us, because here's what I'm going to say. We ran, before we closed, 2019, Paddy's Weekend, we ran an experimental beer series with Treaty City. We brought beer people from all over the country, from Dublin, Cork, Galway, you name it. They came to Limerick to taste beer on a Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, right? That's what you need to do.
And here, just one thing, the perfect location for it would be the King of Limerick Castle. They had Oktoberfest there a few years back, and it was absolutely the beer was okay-ish, but it was a fucking great event. And it'd be perfect for the first or the inaugural Treaty City, I don't know, whatever you fucking call it, but it'd be brilliant anyway.
It's quietness, right? Because I'm laughing here. Right? I'm going to say, right? I'm going to take it all on board, on, right? 100%. I'm not going to ask Steve, because I know that he's got something in his head already, right? So we're going to leave him alone. And I don't answer, right? So all I will say is that to run such a festival, you have to be able to draw people into the city. Mm. I think the lads, with respect to Gustavo and Steve, they've upped the game to a stage where we can now become a beer destination, right? And throw into the mix then the fact that the lads in Crew Brew have gone up the road. Mm-hmm. That now adds to it again, right? And it means that the city is now being recognised for the beer that we produce. Think of it this way, right? 6 years ago, there wasn't a single beer produced in the city, right? County, yes, JJ's were there, but in the city, there wasn't a single beer being produced. You know, so we've come a long way, and I think we're in a position to be able to do such a festival. But I think the time has to be right to do it. I'd say, Owen, watch the space. I'd say give it 12 months, and I'd say it could be something in the cards. Someone said the milk market. The milk market would be fantastic, I think, as well. Yeah, with music. Yeah, I don't want to say too much, because we looked at a venue. We have a venue in mind, right?
Mike, don't leave the stories out before we get a good...
I know.
We had off the press. Don't be telling any of the stories. But we haven't looked at any of
them. Don't be telling too much.
Okay. Gary Oldfield.
Yeah.
Down by the pylons.
We'll all have our shorts off. Yeah. You get your free
hour. Tony's Ballytunnel.
Tony's funny.
I love it. I love it.
Okay. In the proposal, in the people's, no, we're not going. Not going there. Politics have no place in the bar. On that note, if nobody has any other burning issues or questions, beer related, of course, that they wish to discuss with Steve, Gustavo, you know, we're going to call it a night. I just want to thank the two lads for their time, for their efforts, and I'm going to say for the positivity, right, that they've brought in the last 15 months. A lot of companies would have just put the shutters up, walked away. The two guys, right, have actually driven Treaty City beyond what it was, you know, and like, I mean, anyone who can sell out a beer in the capital, right, is doing something right. You know, so I think there's big kudos due to them, right? And all involved, right? And I mean, I'm gonna say Kevin, Alana, and no, I don't want to mention him, right?
Ada does the sales. It's a bit of a dirty word.
Sales and accounts, right? I don't like to mention him, right? Because we don't talk to him sometimes, right? And I'm actually going to say that Steve's wife, Trasa, right, who actually puts up with the man, woo-hoo! Right? Because Trasa, to be fair, I think has brings the level head sometimes and takes the fireness out of it and brings the logic to what they do. It's definitely a team effort between the whole lot of them. And they've brought it from where they were right up to something new, right? And I think we're excited to see where this is going to go over the next 12 months, right? Really, really are. And whether it be in Nicholas Street or elsewhere, and I'm please go to this in Nicholas Street because we like going across there, you know, and wherever it is, we'll always support it, right?
To your health.
On that note, cheers, guys, and to have a good night, right?
Sláinte. Take it easy, guys.
Cheers, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
So we've come to the end of Meet the Brewer, and what a Meet the Brewer it's been. A huge thank you to Gustavo and to Steve for their openness and frankness about the operations of both Nicholas Street and Childers Road. I want to say a big thank you to James, who facilitated the outside broadcast from the Nicholas Street Brewery. It wasn't easy, but he got it done. Remember, this is a special for Indie Beer Week, where we celebrate independent beer. Independent local beer supports families, as we discussed towards the end, you know, and is all about collaboration, groups, and effort. We want to say thank you to all of you for listening. Thank you for buying the growlers, and thank you for buying the beer. Without you, we wouldn't be here, and without you, Steve, Gustavo, and their families wouldn't be here.